The Birchmere presents Omar, July 17th, and Hubert Laws, July 20th. Details at birchmere.com.
I'm Muiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
The thunder and lightning, past the clouds, over the dark night, she reached up to the sky of stars and caught the red hot light of the North Star. The whip, the gun, the knife. She tallies the fire pulled from the bodies of slaves, made into laws, prisons, and courts.
Good morning. This is To Heal DC. This is Joni. And we have 2 hours today. We're here with you from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. The first hour, we are going to be celebrating, as you just heard, some of you may remember, Gaston Neal, very much a part of the WPFW family, been an ancestor for a while, but he was a poet. He is a poet. And he created that song with Fred Foss, To the North Star. We'll be listening to some of it, possibly in the half hour, again, as we go out. But we are excited this first hour. We are joined by Makani Themba, and she'll introduce herself in a moment, Greg Carr, and later on in the second half with Tom Porter. Definitely through much of the show, we're going to be talking about the recent victory in New York City with Zohran Mamdani, and we'll also be talking about some other things. Then in the second hour, we're going to be honoring Dory Ladner, our own recent ancestor. His birthday was Saturday. And we have her sister and her daughter joining us for the 11 a.m. hour. But let's jump right into this hour. Makani Themba is lived here in D.C. for quite a long time, and many of us know her. She now lives in Jackson, but she was born and raised in Harlem, New York City. So she is a native New Yorker, as am I, and we are excited to share with you the victory this last Tuesday and some more detailed background about Zohran Mamdani. And Greg Carr will be joining us soon as well. So, Makani, welcome.
Welcome. It's always good to be here and be with you and the whole WPFW family. Yes.
And Makani, give yourself a one or two sentence intro. I know so many things about you. I don't know how to put it into a sentence.
Well, you know, I think the main thing is that, you know, I'm an organizer. I've been an organizer pretty much my whole life in one form or another. And I raised my children here in the D.C. area. And I just have a lot of love for the district, for the DMV, and I really appreciate WPFW, and I hope all of y'all listening are members.
Or will be. And of course, as we're going to say, talk about both you and I, Native New Yorkers, and it was, I'll just say, it was very thrilling to me to see what happened with this election and to learn more about the history. But let's start. Many people in the D.C. area perhaps are not as focused on this victory last week and don't know much about who Zohran Mamdani is and about his family. So, Makani, let's start a little bit with his family. Tell us who his dad is and who his mom is. Quite amazing. And where he was born and a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, even though I'm not a biographer. So I want to just make that caveat up front. So Zohra Mamdani is the son of two amazing radical thinkers and creators. His mother is Mira Nair, who many people may be familiar with her as a filmmaker and has done work that's explored, ranges of things around race, around gender, around place. I think, and I'll talk a little bit about his dad in a minute, because he is most definitely an intellectual hero of mine. And one of the things I love about...
But I'm sorry, Makani, just share the film that his mom...
Yeah, exactly.
Is one of my favorite films of all...
Well, you should say your favorite.
Okay.
She's done quite a few.
Okay, the only one I know about is Mississippi Masala, which talks about an Indian woman and African-American man, and their relationship came out maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. Magnificent film. And that's
done quite a few magnificent films. Some people are big fans of Salaam Bombay. Some people are big fans of Monsoon Wedding. She has done Namesake, which is also a beautiful film about this, the discovery of a young Indian American and his sort of discovery around his own culture and his parents and their lives. Queen of Katwe, which is about the young sister from Uganda who was based on a true story, who was a chess prodigy. So there's quite a few films that I think are worth, including she's done, a film about New York that a lot of people, two of them, one on September 11th and the other called New York, I Love You, which is a series of stories. So her work really ranges. So I think that's important. Now, Mahmoud Mamdani, who I said before is one of my political heroes, who has definitely shaped my understanding and analysis in the world, is to me one of the most important sort of Africanist political scientists. His work actually crosses genres. One book for me that just completely changed so much about my understanding of the relationship of the colonialist project to everything about us, including our emotions, our behavior, just so much. You knew that it was pervasive and I understood it, but the way he really interrogates that through the lens of the Rwanda massacres, in this book called When Victims Become Killers. It's just such an important piece of work. He's also done some outstanding work on Islamophobia, which some people may know about, Bad Muslim, Good Muslim, or Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, I think. So anyway, he comes from parents that have contributed so much to the culture, to our understanding, to our own, to literally our vocabulary of how we understand the world.
Yes,
so I think that's important. Yes.
And Makani and radio people jump in and out. Tell us again, we are talking about the parents of who?
we're talking about the parents of Zohra Mamdani, who is the presumptive, I think that's important to say, presumptive Democratic nominee for the mayor of New York. There's all kinds of things that can happen between now and November, but right now we're saying the presumptive.
Yes, and this happened just last Tuesday. This was, for many of us, believe it is a tremendous victory, and people are definitely celebrating in New York. So let's, because we're going to be coming back to Zohran in the future, but right now we have limited time. So let's jump into his campaign, and Greg Carr will be joining us soon. It was quite a, I would say, quite an amazing campaign, such a unique campaign. some of the highlights for me that I've heard about is that it was a grassroots campaign. Apparently, he organized about 50,000 volunteers to help him. So tell us, Makani, from your perspective, what were some of the really outstanding things about how he campaigned?
Well, first, I want to really acknowledge that this was a movement project. There were so many organizations, so much organizing that happened, where people made the decision that they were going to throw down and do that work together. So I want to acknowledge, I want to shout out all of the progressive organizations that basically stopped what they were doing, essentially, or took on more work than what they were already doing in the midst of these times, and said, this is a priority. This is a strategic priority for us. And I want to be clear that Zoran Mamdani had all of these relationships and good people, and he's a leader and an organizer in his own right. But a lot of times we have a tendency to boil a campaign down to a person. And I want to make sure we make visible all of the organizing work that went into this. And so that's important, because if as a good organizer, you're organizing organizers in New York City, that's what's required. And also it's required to have people who are credible, you know, who folks already know, who they have a relationship with organizing them. And that's something that we have learned over time, that organizing works, especially when we have those long-term relationships where you're not just jumping in for a campaign. And that's certainly what happened in New York. We had people on the ground who had been organizing for a while, who were mobilizing their base from a place of trust, who could have the conversations with people, the real conversations that allowed people to feel safe to move, to vote, even in these times.
Okay, and Greg Carrs is joined us. Welcome, Greg Carr. People know that Greg Carr is on many platforms, not only at Howard University, but he can be heard weekly on In Class with Carr. He is on Sirius XM, 10-8, Urban View, 10, what is it? 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Wednesday through Friday. So, Greg, I'm going to ask you to jump in a moment, but I want to just ask Makani, please give us examples of some of the organizations that supported him. Because, again, we're here in D.C. People in D.C. are not that familiar, I'm sure, with the campaign.
Well, I'm hesitant to do that because, because some of them are nonprofits, you know, campaigning for a candidate is a bit of a challenge, as you know, here in D.C. But there were many groups. I want to say that, and I'll check and see before the hour's over who I can actually mention that it wouldn't be considered, you know, ratting them out.
Yeah, but it's just important for listeners to know that there were many, many, many organizations who worked with Zoran to come to this victory. So welcome, Greg.
Oh, hey, Joni, and. Hey, what's going on, Sister Makani? How y'all doing?
Good to hear your voice, sir.
It's always good to hear yours.
Yeah. So, Greg, share with our listeners, because some people may not be aware, this really was a tremendous victory for many of us, and I speak as a native New Yorker, a tremendous victory. So talk a little bit, Greg, about the importance of what happened last Tuesday, or anything you'd like to say.
Sure. I mean, I'll keep this brief as I'm listening, and I'm glad to get your thoughts on this, Makani, because as you say, it's a delicate moment. The victory has been achieved, if for no other reason than it kind of, this moment pokes a hole in that kind of a attempt to create this sense of inevitability for this fascist turn in the United States. So we don't know what's going to happen in a few months, but in some ways, a victory has already been secured. And we know that there's a long way to go. Shout out to Bill Ackman and all the terrified billionaires who have now vowed to spend all of their money, if necessary, to try to stop Mamdani. But I have to agree with his chief counsel, Ali Najmi, who has said there's not enough money to stop Zoran. So I encourage them to follow in the footsteps of Elon Musk and spend as much of their money as they can, because, you know, after all, as Brother Mamdani told Kristen Welker, who took the first shot at trying to frame him outside of his humanity on Meet the Press over the weekend, shouldn't be billionaires. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about this moment. There is a convergence of politics, and I kept wanting to call him Mahmoud, but I realized, of course, because like you say, like anybody who went to graduate school in the 80s and 90s, his father was unavoidable if you were talking about really getting a deeper grasp of international politics, particularly coming through the lens of someone out of East Africa, a very important intellectual force, continues to be, and of course, his mom. And of course, we know Denzel Washington was in Mississippi Masala. So I think it was
yes.
years ago, longer than that. But anyway, all that haven't been said, and I'll wrap now. And again, just glad to be part of the conversation. It's very powerful to have a combination of someone whose politics should appeal to anyone who is working poor, working class, anybody with a common sense of decency. When you start talking about affordability, not only in New York, but ultimately around the country and around the world. When you combine that with a razor sharp sense of how to capture what captures young people these days, his commercials are off the chain in terms of getting the egg and cheese and in the bodega and then connecting it to policy. I'm like, come on, man. All of the policies, in fact, should appeal. You combine that with an unwavering commitment to our common humanity. And there are a lot of folks who are Jewish in the city who have rallied behind him.
Absolutely.
Pushing him, you know, and of course, mass commercial news and entertainment media is trying hard to obscure that, but it's not going to work. And then mm-hmm. I think the secret sauce, and I couldn't agree with you more, McConaughey, in terms of trying, you know, not centering the person, because in America, and unfortunately around the world, or the U.S., I should say, the cult of personality has overtaken us. I mean, we see we have somebody that NBC basically created in many ways running the country or running it into the ground. Mm-hmm. But you can't, I don't think, and none of us would, I think, dismiss his magnetism, his personality. I was sitting there watching that Meet the Press thing over the weekend. I'm thinking to myself, dude, when are you going to stop smiling? Because this is not. And then you realize, oh, this is your temperament. Never, never underestimate a sunny disposition. In New York, whether it be Philadelphia, LaGuardia or Franklin Roosevelt, never underestimate the power of personality to serve as a delivery system for things we should be grappling with. He got these people shook, and I couldn't be happier.
Absolutely. And I'm going to jump in a moment about the support in the Jewish community. But McConaughey, can you just share some of Zoran's organizing background? You were telling me he was an organizer for cab drivers. Is that correct?
He definitely was a longtime advocate. In fact, some people may remember they might have first met him publicly when he was on the hunger strike in support of moving legislation for them, because there's so many cab drivers who were owed so much money for these cab leases and among other things. And he helped really change that. He really changed the quality of life for thousands and thousands of New York cab drivers, mostly who are people of color, many of whom, you know, are immigrants, you know, among other things. I do want to say, because I am going to be leaving a little earlier, and I appreciate this opportunity, that I think it's important that you know, one, that yes, let's honor this, his absolute skill and competency and upbringing and background and commitment to do this work. I appreciate the way he has stood unequivocally as a matter of, you know, humanity, which we all should be standing for Palestine in this moment and always. And as someone who lives in Jackson, who at one point our city was sort of the center of the attention of what was possible, I think it's important that we don't get so caught up in who he is that anything that they do to try to twist our perception of that that we then take that to heart and then walk away. Yes. Or that we get too caught up in trying to be like, well, he wasn't perfect when he said this, or wasn't perfect when he said that. I hope that as a movement here in DC and beyond, that we will embrace this as a strategic opportunity, as an opportunity to open up more possibility for all of us everywhere, and that we don't expect it to be perfect, but we do expect it to be an opportunity for us to struggle, for us to improve the quality of life for our people who are drowning in inflation, drowning in lack of housing or lack of affordable housing, sleeping on the couches of their mamas and their grandmas, all of that, that this is an opportunity for us to lean in and not set up unachievable expectations for a person to be the perfect leader to change it all.
Absolutely. And then, and Greg, I heard you say that over the exact same point over the weekend.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you for emphasizing that. And I know this isn't the day, but I hope at some point we can have that conversation about Jackson and about that very, very thing. You know, obviously the Democratic primary back in the spring and now the general election in Jackson. A lot of people worked very hard to try to derail that movement and have mistaken electoral politics with people's movement. When it converges, it's a beautiful thing. It's necessary. But ultimately, as you say, a movement is a lot bigger than any individual or any campaign or any election. Thank you for centering that. That's so important. And I would just say again, in what I said a moment ago, I think, you know, what the Mamdani campaign is helping us do in some ways, almost like lightning kind of throwing into relief what's going on around the country, it shed a little bit of light on the shallowness of our politics and how if we can get past that through organizing, through working. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see because they don't have, I mean, they got money, they've got, you know, trying to capture people's attention, and they're going to wage that war in a way to try to smear this individual. But in some ways, maybe he's emerging as a kind of proxy for work that isn't susceptible to that type of cult of personality politics. And so it's going to be, you know, very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Yes. And I know Makani has to leave in a moment. And Makani, I hope we can have in the future, near future, maybe a whole hour talking with you and possibly with Greg, talking about Jackson. But let me just say, as people probably know, the billionaires, the trillionaires are going to do everything they can to defeat this man and to defeat this campaign. And what they're going to do, what they always do, they're going to do everything they can to keep people divided and keep people confused. And one of the tactics is they're going to throw out that phrase, anti-Semitism. And people just need to know the Jewish community, many, many, many countless numbers of Jewish people in New York City are for this man, Zohran Mamdani. There's a group called Jews for Racial and Economic Justice, JFRED, together with the Jewish Voice for Peace, have a Jews for Zohran campaign. The progressive Jews, which there are many in New York City, are very excited about Zohran. But the billionaires are going to try to use anti-Semitism. And of course, when we talk about Zionists, it's the Christian right wing who are the majority of the Zionists. But that's going to be one of their key tactics. But the people are going to stand up and fight back. Makani, you want to, your last words before you have to go?
Well, my last words are really that I hope that we stay the course. New York is important. I'm not saying this just as a native New Yorker. It obviously sets the pace for so much of what people perceive of the U.S. internationally. So let us lean in. Whatever we can do, I know many of us are busy, we're organizing, we're making a difference in all the ways, because I know PFW listeners, that's what we do. And I'm also saying, like many folks rallied around Chicago and in the beginning, Jackson, that let us see this through. As the rumors and the hate may start to whip, talk to your people, help them see through it. help folks understand the way politics works. And let's not just give up in the midst of whatever the stories and the negativity that may be whipped up. We have an opportunity to practice solidarity and staying together and showing our folks, our people, our community, what it's like to stay the course, because we believe in the politics versus the personality.
Mm-hmm. Makani, thank you so much for joining us. And we hope to have you back again soon. Blessings to you.
Thanks so much. Blessings, family.
And Greg, I don't know how much longer you could stay with us.
About 15, 20 minutes. So you got the big fella coming now.
Tom Ford is coming up. but we'll bring Tom on in a moment, but hopefully. But Greg, despite the pending attack that's going to be given on this young man, 33 years old, but this is still a moment to rejoice. This was a tremendous and is a tremendous victory. So if you want to just talk about that, because I'm not sure, you know, there are a lot of people in the D.C. area who may not be focusing as much on how important this race was last Tuesday and how it might just change politics, the Democratic Party's goals in the future, in the near future.
It's interesting, isn't it, Joni? We talk about this a lot. I mean, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are delivery systems for people seeking to leverage influence. That's all politics is. You're trying to get resources. And you know, I understand we're not going to lose our license about the curse word I'm about to use, but this is a word that has become a dirty word in two-party politics in this country. Equality. Sorry about that. But you know, anytime you start talking about that, you see the people who are referred to as the corporate Dems, they start pushing back. I mean, it's truly remarkable. We're at a moment in U.S. politics, probably have always been there. Certainly, as people who have been oppressed, we understand that it's never been different for us. But, you know, where you can literally be a convicted criminal or widely known and still, I mean, the fact that when after Mamdani clearly was going to be the victor and Cuomo concedes that all these money people in full view of the world and being talked about in commercial news entertainment media said they're going to go out and prop up a candidate telling people, let's see what drop out. We're going to decide between Adams and Cuomo. We're going to meet. And then here come Eric Adams, who shouldn't be able to run for dog catcher, getting all the money necessary. But, you know, I'm encouraged by that. Because I think what we see is, I mean, anytime a candidate for office, certainly in the country's biggest city, one of the centers of the world in terms of its influence, anytime he stands up and says, I want to make this city more affordable. I want the wealthy to pay more of their fair share. I want people who are working every day to be able to make sure to ensure that their children are taken care of at no cost to them, no additional cost. I want the small business owners who do the living and dying in this city to be able to mount their businesses and continue them and without all the obstructions. Well, in some ways, I think this is the same message as Marion Barry in D.C.
or absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But what has shifted is our politics have deteriorated to the point where this country, of course, deindustrialization, the shrinking globe, finds itself at a crossroads from which it won't recover as the central power in the world. As the world changes, the United States is going to recede as a world power. It's still going to be very powerful, but it's not going to be alone. So what happens when you bring all of those forces into one city, commingle it with a progressive politics that is captured one of the two major parties, at least in terms of New York, and is articulating a vision that speaks to equality, that speaks to all of us, that isn't against anybody, but is against the principle that anybody should rule over everybody else. Well, that's very threatening in a world system that is teetering on the edge. And they're going to do everything they can do to defeat him. But last thing I'll say is I think the beauty of this is that this opens a window of possibility for people who are not paying attention to ask themselves, yeah, why can't I just work one job and be able to afford to live? Why can't I have a job? Why can't my elders have health care? Why can't
And the answer to that is they can. And I think that is what this we're going to be paying a lot of attention to this race. We are going to, you know, and then even people who aren't dialed in, as Tish James said, the night of the primary, you know, it's GD name now. And I think a lot of more people are going to know that name because it's going to be a proxy for other things that are going on.
Absolutely. And you're listening to Heal DC on WPFW Radio 89.3 with me. And I think Chuck's going to come in, if not this hour, but definitely in the next hour. We're going to be honoring Dori Ladner for her birthday and her contributions and her legacy in the 11 o'clock hour with Joyce, her sister, and her daughter, Yodit. But right now, we're going to be joined by Tom Porter. In a moment, we're going to play a few seconds of Gaston Neal in honor of his birthday, of his song, To the North Star, which we are heading, perhaps we're heading now to the North Star with this election in New York City.
Screaming white hot flames and agony. She challenged millions of headhunters, dragging and ripping apart impossible tender moments of time. Shipping vessels of history, ancient history, destroying the fabric, the godlike claw of destiny, of a people, with a gun, a knife, a cannon, building the hideous wall of blood called slavery.
And that was Gaston Neal. His birthday is tomorrow. He was on PFW for many years and was a good friend of mine and Tom Porter. Tom, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Well, I'm very happy you could join us. So what would you like to share? You have some comments about New York election or whatever you would want to continue to talk about.
First of all, let's talk about Gaston Neal.
Yes, thank you.
Gaston was a pivotal brother, black man, revolutionary in the District of Columbia. His new school for social research, did I get that?
Yes.
Correctly? His new school was a prototype for political and cultural and economic centers to come that he headed here in D.C. I mean, Gaston was a good friend, a member of the listening group. He might have been the first president. No, he wasn't the first president of the listening group, but he was one of the founders of the listening group, which is a,
yes, he was.
A group of black men who get together once a month and discuss music, culture in a broad sense, politics. And we just met this past Saturday at my house. We had a nice time. Some of you may have known Hassan Ali, who was on WPFW at one point. He was our guest, a member of the listening group, but he talked to us about his journey, which was quite interesting. I mean, there were many sides to Gaston. Gaston was a poet, and a very active and political poet. He was also a great bibliophile, and many of us are recipients of his knowledge and gifts of books. There were so many different sides to Gaston, and to the end, he was Gaston Neal. He wanted to have a party before he passed, and he did. He invited us all over. He knew that he was transitioning, and we had a nice party.
It was a beautiful party. That was a party on a Saturday night, and he left us on Thursday, and it was really something.
And his home-going service was great. Mary Baraka, among others, spoke. And Gaston was just all around great brother, great friend. great father, great husband. And, you know, he was a friend. And the thing about friends is you share things with friends, moments with friends that you don't share with other people. So Gaston and I were friends. We talked about, well, how would you like to be remembered? He said, well, he said, when you are in one of the places that we used to hang out, think about me. And so one of the things that we collectively did when he passed, he was buried in a wooden coffin made by Mike Pratt. Mm-hmm. And he was driven around the city past all of his favorite hangouts.
Yes.
And Nat Turner sang at his service. It's the song that goes, I'll remember you in all our favorite places.
Yes.
And Nat Turner and Gaston, who was a confirmed atheist, he would only have a preacher who could speak in non-atheistic terms.
And yes.
We made sure that we all had assignments. So.
Yes. And I just want to jump in and say, Gaston was born and raised in Pittsburgh. He came here, I think, Tom, was it in the 60s, but it was born in the I think it was 1930s. Something, but he passed in 1999. He was one of the first friends I made when I raised in New York City. I lived in Pittsburgh for a while, so I met Gaston early on when I moved here. And it is because of Gaston that I am on the radio. Gaston taught me about PFW, and he insisted that I meet with Tom Porter. See if I could get a show. But Gaston had many, many dimensions and many listening. Remember him, and many probably never heard of him, but he's important for us to remember. He on WPFW had his own show. I don't know, Tom, if you remember how long it was, but it was called Scattered Pieces of the Action. And He was definitely a political activist and did a lot in this city. Was very close to Marion Barry. Marion Barry helped to give him his last job with the D.C. government in the health department, where he was able to work with in the height of the HIV epidemic. He made sure that this city was aware of the challenges that intravenous drug users were having with HIV/AIDS, which nobody was paying attention to. Gaston made sure that was a priority in what we did in this city to assist people who needed support during that AIDS crisis. So, yeah. And also, I just want to jump in and mention Kenny Carroll and Brian Gilmore. There are quite a number of poets who are close to Gaston. Last year, we did two-hour program for Gaston, but this year, we're having a few minutes. Yes, Tom, were you going to say?
Gaston wrote up a play which was shared by Rap Incorporated, WPFW, and WOL. It was broadcasted simultaneously, called Nisi's Dilemma.
Yes.
And it was not only a great piece of radio theater, but it was the last time, to my knowledge, that WPFW won a national award.
Absolutely. And I want to say that is thanks also to Tom Porter, because Tom Porter was the program director, and this was a magnificent play, a one-woman play. And I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Adora, who was with the health department then and helped to support that play. But Calvin Rowlark, there was a whole group of people that were supported Gaston, and thanks to Tom and thanks to Rap Incorporated and Ron Clark.
And Kathy Hughes at WOL. She and I were the principal part of the principal people on the air. It was actually entitled Nisi's Dilemma, a Condom Confrontation. It was meant Absolutely. To raise awareness of AIDS in our community, but also in the prevention of AIDS in our community. So it was a great piece of theater.
And absolutely. I don't know if Kaskia, I'm going to give Kaskia credit, perhaps, because Kaskia always made sure that some of our things that we did got sent to these organizations that give out awards. But I'm going to definitely lift up Tom Porter with huge thank you and round of applause, because it was Tom Porter who supported Guest in his work with this play. And again, it was, I think, maybe the only time that PFW won this kind of a national award for,
well,
for a piece of work.
I don't know if it was the only time. I know it was the last time. It was the National Association of Community Radio. And they were the major organization that gave out awards in community radio. And it was a Golden Reel, which is the highest award that you can get in radio and in community radio. But Gaston was just he was really an important force in the community, just because he was always making things happen, and he was also proud of the fact that he had been a substance abuser. And he would always say, I've been 1 year, 2 years, how many years, that he was really proud of the fact that he didn't hide the fact that he had been a substance user. But he cleaned himself up, and he was also proud of that, and also proud of the fact that he encouraged other people.
Absolutely. And shout out to his children who may be listening. But again, I want to really thank Tom, because it was Tom, when Gaston and Nap Turner came to Tom, and of course they were good friends. And every year for many, many years in September, which was Substance Abuse Recovery Month, Tom and Gaston, Nap Turner, Calvin Rolark, Ron Clark, and Chuck Brown. Chuck Brown was involved with the campaign Gaston and Nap created a song with Chuck Brown around substance abuse recovery. But it was because of PFW and Tom Porter that this was able to be really promoted throughout the month of September and beyond. And of course, Marion Barrett also very much supported that campaign. So we thank you, Tom. And I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about Gaston's work in D.C. in the 70s. And I know he was very close to the SNCC people. I'm not remembering all the things at the moment he did, but he played a key role in this city. That's for sure.
That's the most important thing to remember about Gaston is that he was a major poet. He was close with a Mary Baraka and all of the poets, and he was respected nationally as a great poet. And hopefully, I won't call his name, but there's a person who lives in this city who's supposed to be finishing a book of Gaston's poetry. I hope it gets done.
Yeah, I hope so too. Gaston was also very close to Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez, and other poets. And one of my dreams is to have some of Gaston's poems recorded with people like Tom Porter reading some of the poems and Sonia Sanchez, etc. But he was and is a magnificent poet that we need to really continue to hear more from. Thankfully, we have that song, To the North Star, with Fred Foss, who is also an important ancestor, also from New York City. and I think a good friend of Tom's as well. Should we keep talking about Gaston, Tom, or you want to jump in about any other? It's up to you.
I guess, well, I just wanted to come on and pay my respects to Gaston, but there are things that are happening in the world, and people are excited about what happened in New York in the Democratic primary, as well they should be. But as the previous speaker on before me said, it won't be easy. The forces of this society and the Democratic Party in particular are going to do everything that they can to deny him the mayorship in New York. So it's going to be an uphill. But I think it's also important to understand the differences between democratic socialism, and communism. And I won't get into it, but there is a difference. And interesting enough, the candidate met, I guess, first with the business community in New York. I think he wants to ensure them that he's not anti-capitalist. And the interesting thing is that how can you have fundamental change in a capitalist society unless you have a reorganization and rearrangement of the political, social, cultural, and economic structure? So it'll be interesting to see if, in fact, that can be maneuvered. Symbolically, it sounds good because you have the word socialism in it. And
certainly, Tom, they're going to attack him. The powers that be are certainly going to use that as another anti-communist campaign, I believe, against him. I know that Greg is still on. You want to have, and probably has to leave. Greg, you want to have a final word before you jump off?
If you don't mind, I want to take this opportunity to ask your question, Bob Tom, on this question, because you've been down this road before many times, thinking about the Jackson campaign, your work just everywhere generally. Talking about, would you mind saying a word about the limits of electoral politics? Because you kind of put the challenge right there where we can grasp it. I mean, in a capitalist society, you know, how far can we expect elected politicians, particularly when you start talking about chief executives, whether it be a president of the United States or a mayor of the largest city in the country? What are the limits? We know the night after, the day after the primary, as they still counting the ranked choice votes, Eric Adams, who shouldn't be anywhere near electoral politics, met with Daniel Loeb, the hedge fund manager in Manhattan, and a bunch of business leaders. And then the New York Times, which, of course, we know is thoroughly compromised, at least they said what it was. They met to try to figure out how they could stop Mondani. So, I mean, could you say a word about the limits and possibilities of electoral politics in this moment?
Well, first of all, the electoral system as we know it is thoroughly corrupt. And I want to go back to a clear case of corruption. In 1984, when Jesse Jackson ran for president, most of that time he was number 3 out of 7 candidates. And his Rainbow Coalition predated what Bernie Sanders was trying to do, was to build a movement. And it was the Democratic Party that did all it could to sabotage Jackson's campaign. Not only the campaign, but if you read the literature around the Clinton campaign, there was a lot of attacks on Jesse Jackson, how they know the Democratic Party no longer needed him. And what they did was they hired major staff people in the Rainbow Coalition as a part of the Democratic Party. They gave them symbolic positions while they moved the leadership of the Democratic Party to the Democratic Leadership Conference, which is made up of Southern governors, Democrats. Jesse did not even have a decent pass, I don't know what it's called, special pass to get in the convention in New York. He had to come in the door like everybody else. Bill Lucy, who came out of a meeting with the Clintons, said to me, I didn't overhear this, he said to me, Tom, they are a bunch of fascists. So if you think or believe that it is possible for electoral politics to solve the solutions in a corrupt, bankrupt, capitalist society, I don't see it for all the reasons why you said what is happening in America. So on the other hand, it's more symbolic than it is real, because if he should become the mayor, he will still have to deal with the forces in New York and in this country. And I would suspect that he will be trying to convince the powers that be that he's not trying to eliminate or change the structure of the democratic society, which is a fool's errand, because this society was founded in racism, in slavery, in genocide, any word you can think of, and has maintained that position. And Trump represents the height of what was started in the beginning. And they're even saying that we are in a post-constitutional period.
Yes.
Yeah, we just have 2 minutes left. Tom, what is your suggestion moving forward to bring some positivity into this country of ours, or elections? Anything you'd like to say? And then Greg, too. Or maybe Greg, you want to jump in with your final comment?
I'll keep mine brief. The model that you have, Joni, the model that we've seen with Tom, with our sister Dory, who we miss every day, but who we hear every day, we don't stop fighting. And when we fight, we win. I'm not talking the way Kamala Harris is talking, but I'm talking the way that the long distance runners have talked. We know it's not about democracy. We know it's not about the United States. It's about our common humanity. And we will do whatever we need to do to uplift that. And if history has shown us anything, is when we do that, we ultimately triumph. So that's all I have to say. Thank you, Tom. And happy birthday, Miss Dory, my friend.
Yes, and stay tuned. Dory's birthday was Saturday, but at 11 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking with Joyce, her sister, and her daughter, Yodit. And Greg, of course, you're welcome.
I wish Tom. I could.
I know you're busy, but I'm sorry.
You know, you never forget, but it's Dory, then Stokely. So, I mean,
absolutely. And Stokely was just yesterday.
Yes.
Tom, you have one minute, and then we're going to go out with 1 minute of Gaston.
Keep your anything eye you on like China to- and the rising Pan-African tide in Africa.
Thank you, Tom Porter. Thank you, Greg
All
Carr.
Right.
Okay.
Let's
send Gaston Neal to the North Star. Oh no. Oh no.
free, to be free, strong enough to bring a fee, strong enough to be free.
Birchmere presents Omar, July 17th, and Hubert Laws, July 20th. Details at birchmere.com.
While Medgar Evers and Patrice Lumumba were not personally acquainted, their lives and struggles are often commemorated together due to the parallels in their commitment to fighting for the self-determination and liberation of African people. WPFW celebrates the centennial of this parallel vision with From Mississippi to the Congo, 100 Years of Lumumba and Medgar, Wednesday, July 2nd, noon until midnight on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This July 4th, WPFW presents Higher, the poetic genius of Sekou Sundiata and the musical innovation of Sly Stone from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m. We begin at 11 a.m. with an airing of Sekou Sundiata's 51st Dream State, a multimedia meditation on empire. At 1 p.m., our multifaceted exploration of Sly Stone kicks off until 7 p.m. with tributes curated by Brother Jamil, James Funk, and DJ Lance Reynolds. Full schedule at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. This is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new showgram, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free your mind!
We are going to march to the White House, and we are going to deliver a message. Trump must go now.
This 4th of July, refusefascism.org is saying, don't celebrate Trump's fascist America. Protest. Don't barbecue with family. While immigrant families are being ripped apart, troops are in the streets, elected officials are being threatened and arrested, and fascism is advancing. No, the lesson of history is that fascism must be defeated before it becomes too late. That is why on July 4th, at 2 p.m. at Logan Circle, refusefascism.org